big show for you here today. The man, the myth, the legend returns. Justin Boone is back off of vacation, and he is back on the show here to talk about eight good players from bad teams projected by BetMGM, not by us, okay? So don't get mad at me about these bad teams, but eight good players from bad teams that we want to draft in fantasy football this year. We also discuss a massive last week of news in the Yahoo fantasy world. Josh Norris and Hayden Winks join our team. Get excited about those guys coming on the show. Boone and I discuss that. And speaking of that big news, college fantasy football is here on Yahoo as well. And Eric Froton joins me at the end of the show to talk through four players you need to keep on your dynasty radar that are college fantasy football superstars here potentially heading into this year. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it's always a hell of a day to talk ball, but it is a very, very special day to talk ball because we've got a lot to get up to. We got a lot to go over today. And joining me back, it's been a minute since we have spoken to each other. We've been like two ships in the night, really, the last couple of months. I think we've only done one pod together. It is my good friend, Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on? Good to see you. You look good. You look refreshed. You look good. You look tan. Got this nice collared shirt on. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm feeling very excited. You nailed it. I am definitely refreshed. Snuck in a little vacation after your June vacation there. And yeah, it's been like a month and a half. Like, is this the longest? I mean, we talked throughout, even when you were on vacation in another continent, we were texting a little bit. Yeah. And we obviously were messaging each other since you've been back and when I was on vacation, especially with some of the big news that has happened, Harmon. And I think if we have a lesson to learn here, it's maybe you and I should take vacations more often because apparently some really good things happen when we leave.
Good things happen when we leave. The company makes moves while one of us is out. So very exciting stuff there. Yes, we do have a hell of a show to get to today. Boone and I are going to talk a little football here. We're going to talk eight good players we want to draft from bad teams. We each have four. By the way, before you guys yell at us, and I'll clarify this again when we get to this segment, we are not saying these teams are going to be bad. We are letting ourselves off the hook. It is BetMGM that says these teams are going to be bad. They're going to win fewer than eight games. We'll get to that when we get to the segment. I just want to say that now so that we don't get yelled at here in the moment. And then at the end of the show, Eric Froton is going to join me to talk a little Yahoo college fantasy football and four players that you guys need to keep on your sicko dynasty radars while you're playing college fantasy football. And on that note, yes, it was a hell of a week for Yahoo last week, Boone. And we actually had a show with me and Rich Rebar that went live Wednesday. And I've been excited about all this stuff for like 2 weeks now, thereabouts, but could not talk about it because we pre-taped the show on Monday because I was traveling on Wednesday. So I couldn't talk about the massive news that broke on Wednesday last week that, yes, in addition to college fantasy football and Eric joining the team, we also have two new excellent analysts joining the Yahoo Fantasy family. We've got Josh Norris and Hayden Winks coming on board. Really excited about this. And look, there's a lot to get into with all of this, but it is a big deal for our show because both of these guys are going to be on our show. And me and you, Boone, and a couple other folks from the team will also be on their show. So Listen, I said this at the FSGA conference with our mega boss, Ryan Spoon. We have the best team in fantasy, period. End of story. It is. This is a great place to be. This is the place to be for fantasy football this year. So I could not be more jacked up for this season, Boone.
No, I mean, so much respect for these guys. Like, the work that they do is obviously top notch. They're great dudes. And it's also like not just the content they put out, but the way they approach the content. They're super hardworking, which you and I have a ton of respect for because that's how we approach things as well. But also like how they've packaged their work over the years and how they're always kind of keeping up with the trends and everything. Just couldn't be more excited to have them. I just echo everything you said. And last year, like when I signed on with Yahoo last year and we got to hang out together in the summer, we went to the expo. I had a sit down with our boss, Jason Klobaka, who's great. And at the time I said to him, like, I'm here now. I hope we keep adding. I hope we keep bringing more people. I hope I'm not the last one in the door. And now a year later, look at this, right? We're bringing in great, really, really talented guys that we're going to get to collaborate with. And I can't wait to. And I've had a chance to talk to them already. And I'm very excited, man. It's going to be really fun. It lights the fire under you for this year. And, you know, there's also like that little competitive nature in me, right? A little iron sharpens iron. It's one of the reasons why we're excited about Jalen Waddle going to the Broncos, because now every day in practice, he's going to line up against Pat Surtain and they're just going to make each other better. Well, working with guys like this, we're just going to get better at our game as well, right? So it's great.
No question.
Couldn't be happier and can't wait to see where we can take this, not just this year, but in the years to come.
Exactly. This is a long-term thing, and it's really exciting. Whatever we do in 2026, we're going to do it even better in 2027. You know, like, that's the way this thing is going to go. Again, just could not be more excited. You mentioned it. These two guys are complete grinders. Hayden really approaches the game in a way that I love and I think is going to be a boost to this show. Josh and I, in addition to, I have a lot of respect for Josh as a host, as an analyst. We've also been like friends since, I don't know, like 2013 or 2014. So this is a really cool moment. Very excited about it. Like I said, this is the best team in fantasy. And you know, the way that like Boone and I approach the game is very different. The way that these two guys approach the game is also very different than us. So I think you guys are going to get some real good perspectives. And like I said, more details will be coming out about all of this. But long story short, our show is not going away. It's not getting any lesser. It's only going to get better, and same with theirs, not going away, only going to get better. So whatever, like, content wise, what you got last year during the season and into August, you can expect 0% of that to get any less. You can only expect it to get better. And that is, that's my guarantee for this whole process here. It is very, very exciting.
Well, I will also say, bringing on Eric, you're going to have him on the show a little bit later, like bringing him on for college football and the launch college football and all that. There's just so many reasons to be pumped up about this season. And I messaged you guys last week, you and producer Colin, saying like, I wanted to get back to work. As soon as the announcement came out, it was like, I wanted to end my vacation right there and be like, let's pump out content. Let's go. So it's fun to be back now. We got a lot of time. Talk to me in December when we're zombies and we've been grinding for several months. I might be singing a different tune, but right now, very fired up to have these guys here and very fired up to get going and get everybody ready for the drafts.
Yeah, I say this every year, and I'm going to say it again when Eric comes on. Obviously, I mentioned this a lot. I don't watch a lot of college football during the season. And as a matter of fact, I pretty much watch like zero college football during the season. But I've already got the itch now from just even thinking about like playing a college fantasy football league. Like, am I going to be starting to chart prospects in, I don't know, October now? As like every year it gets a little earlier. I think by the time we have year two of college fantasy football and Eric here, you know, helping me kind of who do I need to know early on and everything like that, who's declaring, you know, maybe who's going to be the stars of tomorrow. Shoot, maybe I'm just going to start charting prospects in September. I don't know. Let's go ahead and get ahead. I think that's the way we'll look at it. But before I overload all of our calendars here in September, let's talk about some players that we're looking forward to drafting for the 2026 fantasy football season that don't play for good teams. And again, this is not our opinion of who's going to be good. As a matter of fact, I raised my eyebrows at a few of these win totals here. These are the teams that BetMGM has projected for fewer than 8 wins this year, and I'm going to go in descending order. Atlanta Falcons, Carolina Panthers, Indianapolis Colts, New Orleans Saints, New York Giants, Washington Commanders, Tennessee Titans, Cleveland Browns, Las Vegas Raiders, New York Jets, Miami Dolphins, and the Arizona Cardinals at 3.5 wins. That is tough to look at. Okay, Boone, first thoughts just on this list here. One, shout out to producer Colin for getting his own tweet in the show. You always got to love to see that. Two, we could have just done this whole segment on the NFC South because we've got 3 teams from the NFC South here. Those are my first thoughts looking at some of these teams.
Well, we'll mention as we go the ones that I think were kind of just up against it, like that we think probably will be good, have a chance to maybe be playoff teams, but are on this list. And we will bring up players from a couple of those. But some of the ones at the bottom, like, there's no way. The Dolphins, the Cardinals, like, these teams are definitely not going to be fighting for anything. They're going to be fighting for an early pick in next year's draft is really what they're going to be going for. And there are some players on those teams that I'm not scared to draft, and we're going to highlight some of those today. So that's kind of where it stands for me. There's a few names that even I felt a little guilty, like, when I thought about, I'm like, okay, should we really talk about that guy? The player's really good, and the team's probably going to be better than this, but it's all right. That's the nature of the game. It's just an excuse to talk about some of these players that we're targeting, even though the teams, the environments, the situations might not be ideal. Maybe they're not going to be on winning teams, or maybe they'll be fighting all year long for those playoff spots. You still want to draft some of those guys. You don't completely avoid them.
Well, I think that transitions us perfectly to your first player here, which is Las Vegas Raiders tight end Brock Bowers. Current ADP is 17th overall. He is the tight end one off the board here. And Boone, I'll throw it to you with this. Last year, and I'm going to do the show again, hopefully, with Nate, where I discussed how, you know, like, the riskiest ADPs relative to team win totals and everything, like, how many guys, essentially, like, were there two plus players going on, like, these bad projected teams in ADP? Like, how was the fantasy community out of whack with win totals and offensive standings and everything like that? The Raiders are one of the ones last year that had two guys going in the top 20 and were projected to be one of the worst teams in the league. They were the worst team in the league based on record, and we're doing it again. We've got two Raiders in the top 17 picks here, but you are comfortable with Brock Bowers. Tell us why.
I mean, realistically, I'm comfortable drafting both of them. And we can talk about Genty very quickly off the top here. I mean, 1,300 yards from scrimmage and 10 touchdowns last year in a fairly chaotic environment, changing the coordinator mid-season. It was definitely not ideal circumstances for him. He still produced. I know at times it didn't quite feel like what people paid for in their drafts, but he clearly is a good player. And now that environment around him is going to get better. So definitely comfortable taking Genty. Bowers, to me, the reason I wanted to mention him, because, yeah, it might feel like a bit of a waste of time to talk about the guy who is the tight end one, but I think he could be the tight end one and be like that true difference maker, that true league winner. And somebody that, when you're talking about half PPR, is a great second round pick. When you're talking about full PPR, I think there's an argument for him at the end of the first round and the beginning of the second round. That's how good this guy can be. And part of it, Harmon, is that they didn't really address the receiver core. One of the first things I thought they were going to do this offseason was go out and get somebody. They got Jalen Naylor, and Jalen Naylor is fine. I think he's a good depth player. Is he someone that's going to come in and all of a sudden be this number one receiver for this team? No, not at all. So Brock Bowers is still going to be that de facto number one receiver in this offense. You go back to last year, started off so strong, right? Five catches, over 100 yards, only played about 50% of the snaps in week one, and then it all fell apart. He got hurt in that game. He tried to play through the injury, just wasn't really the same player, ended up missing some time. And overall, the crazy part is he still finished as a top four fantasy tight end in fantasy points per game, and yet he just wasn't the same guy. But you think back to the year before, what was he doing? 112 catches, 1,200 yards, five touchdowns. Like, this guy could absolutely even crush those numbers, I think, this season. And part of it is you're bringing in Clint Kubiak. So a better coaching staff, a really solid offensive mind, a guy who has had a lot of success in his last few stops. You really kind of solve the quarterback situation, which was a huge problem last year. And I don't think it was all on Geno Smith, but you bring in a competent veteran in Kirk Cousins. Now you have Fernando Mendoza, who eventually, probably sooner rather than later, is going to take over and be that franchise quarterback for them. And I think we have fairly high hopes. I don't think he's going to be an elite player, but I think he's going to be a good quarterback for this offense. And when you attach him to Kubiak, I think you're potentially going to get the most out of him in this offense. So that's exciting. And you just look at what Bowers can be. The talent is there. He showed it as a rookie. He was the number two fantasy producer at tight end in terms of fantasy points per game behind only George Kittle. And I think last year, like, when you think about what Trey McBride did, right? Trey McBride last season had one of these kind of transcendent fantasy tight end seasons, scored more than two fantasy points per game, more than the next closest tight end. I think Bowers has that in him, and Bowers now is kind of set up the way McBride was set up last year, where he didn't really have a ton around him, where they were just throwing a ton to him. I think that's going to be Bowers this season, and I think we're going to see potentially even better numbers than we saw from McBride last year. And people that are looking back at what happened last year are discounting him because of the injury or anything like that. don't. You're making a huge mistake, because when I say he could go at the end of the first round, you look back to last year. We're talking about PPR. That's where the format that I'm suggesting that in. There's only five running backs and three wide receivers that averaged more fantasy points per game than him in PPR last year. So he's right in that conversation, Harmon. And I think it's important to mention that, because I think he should go higher than most people probably feel comfortable taking a tight end.
Yeah, I like it. You know, we had a stat from Dave Kluge up here about how Brock Bowers led all tight ends as a rookie in deep shots and yards after catch. I think that's really kind of the mold here for what you want out of the number one pass catcher in this Clint Kubiak offense. And yeah, I agree with you about the receiver core. I mean, obviously on paper, it's not a very good unit. I think a guy like Jack Besh can be better in year two, but even if he hits the ceiling, I thought about him as a prospect. He's more of like a complementary piece to an offense than a featured piece. Trey Tucker is like a useful player. Jalen Naylor, I think these guys can all be, if they work out, useful players, but they will orbit around Brock Bowers here in this Raiders solar system. And I do think for the most part, this tight end can play wide receiver is nonsense. For the most part, these guys are tight ends. They're not going to be good receivers if used at a receiver eligible spot. I do think Bowers, just from a build and a movement skills perspective, is different. He's more unique. He's more of a unicorn than some of these other guys that have come in through the league. I was talking with somebody yesterday who was speaking with one of his former coaches, is like kind of compared to like a Drake London type of player. And I think that would make sense from a deployment usage standpoint, like get him on these big breaking routes, which are key to this system. So I'm with you. I don't think we need to have a debate here about Brock Bowers. My only question to you is, you think he's a tight end one? Do you think he is in like a tier of his own? Because I think it's interesting that he's got like a new play caller here. Trey McBride, also a new play caller that I'm kind of excited about. So I'm just curious where you stand with like Brock Bowers relative to Trey McBride and Colson Loveland, who are kind of the big three at this position.
Well, shout out to you, because Colson Loveland's ADP is now pushed up, I believe, to the back end of the third round. And when we did a mock draft show a couple months ago, you took him in the third round, and I gave you a hard time, not because I didn't like Colson Loveland,
yeah,
but because I was like, that's not a great value. He goes like a round and a half later than that normally. You should have waited.
That was my whole point.
Well,
my whole point was that
he's going basically right where you took him. So yeah, tip of the cap to you on that one. I still think he has.
And by the way, now I don't know if I want to take him in the third round. I don't know if I actually want to do it. So
now it's not cool. Yeah. Everyone knows about that band. I don't want to go see them now.
Exactly.
No. But yeah, Loveland, I think, is going to have a great season, but we still need to see him do it right for a whole year. He had great finish last year. He set up very well this year. I don't think you would consider drafting him as the number one tight end. Trey McBride, the environment that he had last year, it was Marvin Harrison out in the second half of the season. It was Jacoby Brissett throwing the ball all over the yard. And that's what really elevated him to becoming this guy that was the unquestioned number one in the offense, the guy that was just dominating week in and week out. Now we're going to have Marvin Harrison back. And when Marvin Harrison was out there last year, McBride was still really, really good, but didn't have that like elite number, right? It wasn't really getting to that level. So I think he's still a fine pick. But if I'm taken between them, I think Bowers is the guy that potentially has that like transcendent season at tight end. He's going to be the one that you want. And you do have to pay up for him, but I think it's going to be worth it. I will also tease that in our next segment, there is another tight end that if you don't get Bowers, if you don't get one of these three elite guys, that I am taking and I think has a chance to join that mix with those guys and have a really big year. So there's a few options, and some people want to wait at tight end. Some people want to spend up early. I think for me overall, I'd like to get one of the elite guys if I can, but I'm also targeting this other player who's kind of more in the middle and a little cheaper than some of these high-end options.
All right, that's a good tease. We will get to that in the next segment. I'll go ahead and roll into my first player here, which is I think another semi-cheating answer, because one, this guy was really good last year. He's a good player. And also, this New Orleans Saints at 7.5 wins was one of the ones I raised my eyebrows at, being like, I think the Saints are going to be better than an 8-win team. I think they could win that division this year. Nevertheless, I'm cheating here and saying Chris Olave at an ADP of 27th overall and wide receiver 12 is one that I'm really interested in. I think Olave is a really good player. I think he can hold down this target total of 139. I like Jordan Tyson. I like his fit in this offense, but he is still a rookie receiver who, by the way, has like barely practiced with this team because of his hamstring injury. We will see how that continues over the course of the summer, but I think there's just a dearth of quality options behind Olave. He should still remain the most targeted player in this unit here. And there's still an injury concern, obviously, with him. Just because he did not suffer a concussion last year doesn't mean he will never suffer a concussion ever again. There is still that risk. Like, we just don't talk about it anymore because it didn't happen last year. He also had like a blood clots issue that caused him to miss week 18, and he was out with that at times this year. So I'm speaking to negatives about the player I really want to draft right now. But nevertheless, when I get into that low end wide receiver one range, I still think Chris Olave has more room to grow based on what he showed in the back half of the year with Tyler Shuck than what we saw throughout the course of the year.
Yeah, I like that call. And I mean, fantasy managers are going to remember what he did in the fantasy playoffs, right? Was the second highest scoring fantasy receiver behind only Puka Nacua. Had a couple top 10 fantasy receiver finishes there in the semifinals and the finals. So definitely helped people get to and win their championship. Averaged the sixth most targets per game during the season, though. And that's the only spot where I'm a little bit hung up on it. Not that I think it's going to like crater his value that Tyson's there, but it's probably going to bump him down. You seem a little more optimistic that he's going to be able to hold those numbers and hold that volume. I think realistically, like when I'm doing projections, I have to bump him down just a little, but it's not bumping him down into a range that you aren't going to draft him. It's bumping him down where he's still in the conversation as a low-end wide receiver one, high-end wide receiver two, in an offense that we do want pieces of, like you mentioned, that we're excited about. And that, yeah, I think we're going to see him continue what he did late last year. But I'll also mention that one of the things that I think people look back to and just assume, I know I did, was that his volume probably went up after Rashid Shaheed left, right? Because they traded him away. And now you figure, okay, well, maybe Olave had similar to McBride, where you move one of the pieces out of the offense and all of a sudden he gets a little more work. He actually was averaging more targets when Shaheed was out there. So sometimes it is possible. The addition of a player can make the offense sustain drives more, can make the offense get into scoring position more. And those things could help Olave, even if he does lose a little bit of volume. So yeah, I still really like him. I want to disagree with you on some of these guys, but this is one where I have to agree, and I'm still happy to get him on my team.
I think that last point that you had there is the reason that I'm okay if I sacrifice a little bit of volume. I mean, he was targeted on 27% of his routes from week 10 on with Tyler Shuck, 86 yards per game. I'm okay if he's down to about like 25% or something like that, because I think the offense can just be better and more potent, more scoring opportunities. So that's why I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of volume and still happy with him as a low end wide receiver one type. Okay, let's get to another pick of yours here, and one that, yeah, unfortunately, I don't know that we're going to disagree on this one based on one of our few podcasts that we've done in the last 2 months together.
Yeah, I mean, it's Terry McLaurin. I kind of tried to sneak him into that conversation as the guy that could be this year's George Pickens when we did that episode. And it was a bit of a stretch. Like, he's already been a really good receiver. He's had a big season. Just 2 years ago, he had a career year, wide receiver 14 in fantasy points per game. It was when Jaden Daniels came into the league, had an outstanding rookie year. And then last year, everything just went south, right? You had the contract dispute before the season. You had Jaden Daniels getting hurt throughout the year. You had McLaurin missing time with injury throughout the year, to the point where these guys only really played 3 games together last season. And if you look back, which I think too many people do, just look back at the year-end stats, look back at the production, and it's, man, what a disappointing year for Terry McLaurin. But right now, if we look forward, how are you not excited about this guy? How are you not in on this player who's going at the 4-5 turn right now, round 4-5? You get him there, you could get him as your wide receiver 2, your wide receiver 3 potentially, and potentially have a chance to hit on those top 15 kind of numbers again, because there was a point in this offseason where everyone had penciled in Brandon Ayuk joining the Washington Commanders. I don't think that's going to happen. And I'll give us a little pat on the back, Harmon, that we were kind of saying this all offseason that, hey, even if he does join, which was not guaranteed, is this guy going to be the same player that he was a couple years ago? I can't say that I envisioned it going the way that it's gone so far, but really, we can't factor him in on this offense at all. So then who else is out there who's going to move the needle? Stefon Diggs? Sure. But if Stefon Diggs comes in, is he not filling kind of like a Deebo Samuel role in terms of volume? Not the same type of player, but just in terms of the kind of volume that we saw Deebo Samuel get a couple years ago when McLaurin had that big season. So I like Chigakonkwo at tight end there. I like Antonio Williams, the rookie at receiver. But these aren't guys that I think are going to command significant volume that's going to take away from Terry McLaurin. So what's stopping him from getting back to the kind of numbers that he had 2 years ago, or just doing something close to that? And like I said, where you're getting him right now at the fringe of the low-end wide receiver 2, high-end wide receiver 3 kind of range at wide receiver 24 in ADP, that's a great spot. That is a massive value. And all we really need is good health from him and good health from Daniels. And I think he crushes that number.
Yeah, I think he does too. And like, he's a great fourth round pick to me. I have him at receiver 19 right now, so a little bit ahead of consensus there. And yeah, just someone to me that I think is an obvious bounce back candidate. Last year was a very predictable down year for him based on all the reasons that you said, primarily the fact that he missed so much time in training camp. Just, you know, got hurt as well, which can sometimes happen. And yeah, I mean, the Ayuk thing, man, I don't even know what to say about that. Like, it is what it is. But I don't think he's going to be on now as we sit here on July 15th. And obviously this is subject to change. My guess is he's not on this roster and he's not on any roster in the 2026 Agreed. Football season. But we shall see. I've been kind of like, I just updated my dynasty rankings today, Boone. And I've been like holding a respectful spot, not a high spot, but like a respectful spot for Ayuk, just like on the off chance he was going to be a commander, which about a month ago, I probably would have said, yeah, by the time we get into August, he will be on that roster. I had to just like completely tank him and just kind of throw up the shrug emoji with like, what are you going to do for Brandon Ayuk?
Do you know off the top of your head?
What's a long time ago.
What was a respectable
the number
spot?
Is?
Do you know off the top of your head? Like, or just the range?
The respectable spot was like in the high 50s, like 58 or something. Now he's like in the 70s for receivers. I mean, if you want to trade,
I got a really hard time early this offseason because, yeah, in my dynasty trade value charts, I had him around 70 for a long time, and people were like, what are you talking about? It's Brandon Ayuk. And I was just like, yeah, like all the things I said earlier, I just don't see it coming together for him this year, that even if he gets back out on the field, I don't think he's going to be the same player. And now it's like, yeah, I think I have him at like 80 or 90. Like at this point, it's like you almost want to drop him. You can't yet because the talent is there and might turn it around at some point. But now he feels like a roster clogger. And it's incredible for a guy that a couple of years ago we were both very high on. We were both excited to have on our teams and looked like was going to have a fantastic career. It's kind of sad, really.
Yeah, the all green reception perception route chart curse lives on very strongly with Brandon Ayuk. And you know what I mean by that if you listen to my other podcast. Okay, my second player here before we get to break. This one I don't feel as strongly about as like a Chris Olave, and honestly don't feel as strongly about as like my third player that we'll get to. But that's Quinshon Judkins, Cleveland Browns running back. Look, the Browns aren't going to be good this year. Spoiler alert. However, at running back 21 ADP, 47th overall consensus ADP, I do think there's at least a decent opportunity with Quinshon Judkins there. I mean, I have him in line with ADP here. I don't have him too far ahead of that or anything. However, just when I get into his tier of back at the position, at least for me, I think that he's like the end of a tier that I can see being a solid, useful running back too. As opposed to the guys, you know, and this is just my opinion right now, like Bucky Irving, Bashaul Tutin, Travion Henderson, that I see more as like very boom bust running back three types with shakier outlooks. So for me, simply because Quinshon Judkins is kind of the last in his tier when I'm doing my rankings, I think I'm going to end up drafting him a decent amount as my running back two, even though there are obvious questions with the offensive environment. And how much pass catching work is he going to get with Dylan Sampson still on the roster?
Yeah, I considered bringing him up on today's show. I didn't have the guts to go with the Browns running back, so well done by you to do that. But there's a lot of reasons to actually be excited about him, right? On top of the fact that he is back out there coming off the serious injury, he's back out there at practice, he was at OTAs, he's playing with the offense, he's cutting and getting upfield. Like, those are all positive signs in his progress to get back out there and get somewhere close to back to form. The form that we saw as a rookie that was very good before the injuries hit. And I think one of the things that people might forget is it wasn't just the season-ending injury that happened at the end of the year. There was a shoulder injury that happened, I believe, in week eight. Prior to that, he was putting up excellent numbers. And we remember everything that happened. He wasn't out there with the team week one. He shows up week two, doesn't play a ton of snaps, and still puts up okay numbers in that game somehow. But he was a top 20 fantasy RB in four of his first six games, including three top 12 fantasy finishes at running back in those first six games. But then that shoulder injury happened. And before that, RB 14, average 14.6 fantasy points per game. After the injury, RB 30 from week 9 to week 15. I'm not counting week 16 because that's when he actually got hurt. So he was pretty good before that shoulder injury happened. And yes, new offense, Todd Monken taking over. I think that's going to make the Browns maybe a little more fun this year to watch. So I'm kind of excited to see what this offense looks like. And yeah, I think there's a chance with some better talent at receiver. Now that they've invested in receiver with Casey Concepcion, with Denzel Boston. Now we have some better players on this offense to go along with Harold Fannin. The quarterback is still a question, but I think Quinshon Judkins is pretty interesting. I like that you were willing to bring him up here because, yeah, I wasn't, but he's somebody that I do draft and I think has a much higher ceiling than people realize.
Yeah, I think safe, projectable workload. Like, there's no one else kind of coming for his carries and a decent ceiling if the offensive line comes together. I think that's the biggest question. Obviously, it's a totally remade unit from what we saw last year. But I agree with your kind of thesis there that while the Browns offense isn't going to be good, I think Todd Monken is going to make them fun. I mean, I think I said this around the time of the NFL draft that they're going to be a great team that if you're a Browns fan or you're like a Casey Concepcion, Denzel Boston dynasty manager, invest in NFL Pro because I think the offense is going to be fun to watch on film. It's just not going to be fun to look at the box score on Sunday. And I think we all are pretty well prepared for that at this point. But we are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we've got four more players from bad teams that we want to draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Justin Boone and I are continuing to talk through players from bad teams that we want to draft here. Don't think anyone will dispute this next player is on a team that's not projected to be very good, but Justin Boone, you are in on drafting rookie receiver Carnell Tate with an ADP of 31 at wide receiver, 70th overall. Tell us why you're still into Tate, even though he plays for the Tennessee Titans.
I forget your take on Tate. I'm sure you're going to give it to us in a minute here, but I like the player quite a bit, and I really like where he's ended up. Like the draft capital, all of that, that's fantastic. Fourth overall, all those things are just like little data points that just keep pushing his profile in the right direction. But he ends up on this Titans team that, man, last year, you look at that receiving core, among the worst in the league, Calvin Ridley, Chimere Dike, Elike Omanor, like, just really bad. I don't want to insult those players at all. They had some moments for sure, but overall, that is a pretty weak receiver core, and it made it really tough to judge the kind of player that Cam Ward was. Is he going to be a guy that was worthy of being an early pick, or is he going to be somebody that kind of fades and turns into a bust? I think we're going to get a much better indication of the kind of player that he's going to be this year. You bring in Brian Daboll and the whole new coaching staff, but Brian Daboll is the OC. I think he is going to get a lot more out of this offense. I think he's been a really successful OC in the league. We've seen him have success with young quarterbacks as well. But now you're giving Ward a legit receiving core. You're bringing in Tate, who can be that number one outside receiver for them. You bring in Wandell Robinson. And I know a lot of people say a lot of things about Wandell Robinson, but he kind of fits with Tate very well, right? He can be that kind of shifty slot guy. Tate's that true number one profile. You put these two together, they work together very well, and really you want to focus the volume on these two. So I think Tate is going to get a lot of targets as a rookie. I think he has the talent to come through with it, and I think this Titans team is one that might surprise people. I agree with you. I don't think they're going to be anywhere near the playoffs or anything like that, but I think they're going to be a lot better than they were last year. I think they're going to be more competitive. I think this offense is just going to be another one of these kind of like the Browns where they're more fun to watch, that they have some more talent, they have better coaching. And all of a sudden now we're not talking about them as a game that nobody's going to be watching. We're talking about them as a game that people are certainly going to be excited about, and people are going to have a lot of fantasy assets in and all that sort of stuff. So for me, the reports out of OTAs were very positive about Tate. I think he's going to carry that into summer. and where you're getting him, right? In drafts, it's sort of like the Terry McLaurin thing, right? He's going even later than McLaurin, but you're getting him as maybe your wide receiver two, probably your wide receiver three. And I think he has upside to sneak into the top 24 to be a potential wide receiver two for fantasy. And you're getting him outside of the top 30 at the position. So I'm really interested in him, and I'm surprised that maybe that'll happen over the summer. You see a preseason highlight or two or a training camp highlight or two, and all of a sudden, boom, we see the ADP rise. But I'm surprised as a rookie, we're not seeing him pushed that much further up in ADP already. Maybe it'll happen before we get to the main fantasy season. But yeah, he's a player that people should be excited about, and I'm taking on a bunch of teams.
That last point there, I think, is huge, because I think wide receiver 31 is like the floor for his ADP. It can pretty much only go up from here. Like, if you're doing best ball drafts, and honestly, I was saying this a month ago, that like you should go ahead and take him now, because he's going to be more expensive than this once we get into training camp. And that's a great point about the OTAs too. Every now and again, I find myself like weirdly tethered to a team's media market, because I go on a lot of their shows. Usually it's like a team that has some questionable receiver rooms. It was like the Bills for a long time. Shout out to Mike Shope and the boys up at WGR. But I really weirdly follow a lot of like Titans writers and stuff like that, and they could not like stop talking about how good Carnell Tate was at OTAs. It was like clearly just they found the oasis in the desert. You know, like you said, no disrespect to those guys last year, but Nate had the stat where Cam Ward, I think, took more dropbacks with day three rookies than anybody in NFL history or something like that. Day three or undrafted rookies. And yeah, it felt that way watching that team. Like, some of those guys were essentially just thrown to the wolves on a poorly designed offense. And even if you're like me and you've got questions about Brian Daboll, you could admit that it's going to be better designed this year than it was last year. And Tate, probably not as good as a typical receiver that goes fourth overall, but he went fourth overall in the draft. And it's pretty good considering the talent in the rest of this class. One thing I would note too, like I brought up Nate and several other like quarterback evaluators that I really respect, even though there's no good stats for Cam Ward last year, they're still pretty optimistic about what Ward can be. One of those folks is Alfredo Brown, who's doing some quarterback work for us at Reception Perception now. And one of the things that was really interesting from his profile on Cam Ward was that some of his best throws were kind of along that straight line, like curls and nine routes. He liked to take those throws. He was pretty solid when in isolation making those throws. And to me, Boone, that was some of the best stuff that Carnell Tate did, like curl routes, dropping his weight, coming back to the quarterback. I think stylistically, those two guys fit really well together.
Well, and we've been off for a long time, but I know you've missed this. I will bring back your favorite thing, my strength of schedule matrix, Harmon.
Oh,
the Titans
baby.
Receivers.
I've been waiting to hear about strength of schedule. Let's go.
The Titans receivers, the fifth easiest fantasy schedule among receivers this season. So that's just another reason. The wind at his back, that's going to help him. A lot of reasons to be in on him as a player that you want to take and you want to have on as many rosters as possible this year. Because, yeah, wide receiver 31, that ain't it. That ain't where his ADP should be. And it's going to correct, I think, over the next couple months.
All right, let's stick on receivers that I really like here for my third player, and that is Drake London, who it's not like a controversial stance to say I want to draft Drake London. He is the 20th overall player off the board. He is ranked wide receiver 8, but Boone, I actually just wanted to come on and talk through this Drake London thing here because I have gone back and forth on my stance on Drake London from a fantasy perspective this year. Now, I think London is a baller. He's awesome. He was 7th among wide receivers in yards per game last year. Just when he was out there, he was really good. He actually had some of like the biggest fantasy individual week performances at wide receiver last year with Michael Penix. So number one, that makes me feel pretty good. Like, okay, if it's Penix, like we know that Penix is a questionable player, but he can get the ball to Drake London, especially down the football field, right? So, okay, that's check number one. I feel pretty good about that. There's the Tua part of this, and I think both these guys end up starting games this year. That's just probably how it's going to be. I kind of think Tua, for all of his flaws, is an okay enough distributor. I'm really selling this here. An okay enough distributor for me to feel good about Drake London getting peppered with like in breakers and slants and dig routes. Some of the routes that, you know, in fairness to Tua, at different times in his career, he was pretty good at throwing. You know, I think the Stefanski system wants to get the ball out quick and wants to hit that primary read off play action on some of these in breakers. Those are really good routes for Drake London. And we know that Tua is going to get the ball out fast to his first read, which is going to be Drake London. So where are you on London? Are you in line with ADP? Have you also, again, my very convincing argument, talked yourself into Drake London? Tell me where you're at with the Falcons wide receiver.
Well, first off, I think it's going to be Tua to start the season. I don't know if that's where you're at, but I think it's going to be Tua to start the season with, you know, Penix coming back from the injury. And why not go about it that way, right? Put the veteran guy out there. You have the excuse that Penix is still working back from the injury. And then if Tua falters, Penix is healthy, boom, you put him out there and it's not really bothering anyone or upsetting anyone. Because if you go the opposite way and it's Penix first and then you bench him, that's basically the end of Penix's career, right? Like, you're not going to see him play quarterback in Atlanta after that if you go in that direction. So I think Tua will probably start the year. I agree with you. I think Tua can support a couple fantasy options in this offense. And I actually have London even higher than ADP. I have him as my wide receiver 7. Mm. I think there's a lot of reasons. Like, you look back to what he was doing last year. This is another one where there was like some injuries kind of involved in it, right? People might look back and go, oh, man, he, disappointing season. He didn't break 1,000 yards, but he missed 5 games. And the on pace stats, like this one even shocked me. He was on pace over 17 game schedule, 96 catches, over 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns if he had played 17 games. That's how well he was playing last year. And if you go from before the serious injury that cost him 4 games in the second half of the season, so just through week 11, he was averaging the 3rd most fantasy points among wide receivers behind only JSN and Puka Nacua. So he is kind of secretly or sneakily in that conversation, maybe not quite with the elite guys, but not far off. I think he belongs in like that next tier with like CeeDee Lamb and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't think people look at him that way, but I think that's where he should be. So locked in as a top 10 receiver, no doubt. I like Zachariah Branch probably more than most, and I think he's going to factor into this offense. And we're still keeping that candle lit for Jahan Dotson, but these guys aren't going to they're not going to take big volume away from London, though. That's just not going to happen. And the Kyle Pitts of it all, I've done my bit on Kyle Pitts, where when London was out there and healthy, Kyle Pitts was not even startable almost in fantasy. And then in the games where London was hurt or kind of eased back in, all of a sudden Kyle Pitts is the number one tight end overall and incredible. So I don't think Kyle Pitts either is going to be somebody that's going to take significant volume away. I really like London. We liked him last year as a second round pick, and I think he's another solid second round pick in a round where there's a lot of strong picks in the second round. It's going to be pretty hard to screw that one up, but London looks fantastic this year. And yeah, I think things are pointing in the right direction for him again.
Okay. Couple things here. One, can we pull that Dave Kluge tweet up again, that we had on the stream? Cause I just think this is so funny and this is good posting by Dave, who, I say this with love cause he's an industry friend. You mentioned the pace stats. Obviously people can see it's incredible stuff. However, the line I want to point out here is that Dave said, still just 24 years old. London's best days are ahead of him. Dark horse wide receiver, 1 overall candidate this year. Totally with that last sentence. I looked it up. I was like, 24 years old still? This, again, great posting by Dave. I'm not sure when he sent this, but Drake London turns 25 in 9 days on July 24th. So that's just, again, I don't know when he posted that. Maybe the producers found that from like 3 months ago, but very funny timing that, yes, he is in this moment in human history, 24 years old. He will be 25 in 9 days by the end of the month. So that's good posting by Dave Kluge there. My second question to you, round two, agree, really good picks, tons of good picks in round two. One of the guys I've been weighing Drake London against, and this guy plays for a good team, but an offense we have questions about. Do you like Drake London or Nico Collins better? Because that for me has been like choosing between my two dogs here.
It's Drake London, and you know I like Nico Collins as well. I'm happy to take both of them. Heck, I took Nico Collins and Scott Fishbowl, so I am very happy to have Nico Collins on my teams. But no, I think you have to go with London. I think we've seen the higher ceiling. We've seen Nico be like a pretty good, like mid-range wide receiver one. I think London has the potential to be like top five, maybe even better, as we saw for a big chunk of last year. So I'm going with him, and I think it's pretty decisively in my mind going with London.
I like it. Okay. I think I'm going to be on the other side, or at least it's going to be closer. I think I would take Nico Collins been a better, slightly better receiver in real life. From a per route standpoint, he's been slightly better too. Again, it's very, very close between these
he's
two
got
guys.
Way tougher target competition though. Way tougher.
Does he?
I mean,
are you sure?
Jaden Higgins
how
is
sure
a legit receiver. And I think Jalen Noel, I don't know where Tank Dell is going to be at, but Jalen Noel, I know you like Jalen Noel. Jalen Noel, I think, is going to be the number three receiver there. And I think he's pretty good as well. I think he's very underrated. So I think they have a decent receiving core there. And I don't think the Falcons can match that at all. So I think London's just going to get incredible volume again, which pushes him above.
I don't know. I mean, I like Higgins and Noel. I like both those players. I'm also higher than almost anybody than on Jahan Dotson. Still, I'm keeping two candles lit for Jahan Dotson. But like, I think Kyle Pitts probably close to Jaden Higgins, if not straight up better than Jaden Higgins. And then again, like, yeah, I don't know. To me, I think it's a little closer target competition than you maybe think. And again, like I said, for the other two guys, I would just note that like quarterback quality probably goes to definitely goes to Nico Collins for all the Stroud questions we have, still a better quarterback. And I do think them going to more heavy personnel could really help Nico consolidate targets, but I hope you're right about Tank Dell. I just have no idea how to calibrate to what Tank Dell is going to be this year. So I think it's a good debate. I think it's a close one. But
agreed.
To me, I will give it to Nico Collins there. Okay. We're going to take one more quick break here. When we come back, we're going to go through two more players on bad teams that we want to draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We've got two more players from bad teams that we want to draft. Boone, your fourth player, you teased this earlier, another tight end, Tyler Warren, tight end 4 ADP, 51st overall. Why are you into drafting Tyler Warren this year?
He's almost like Brock Bowers light in my mind in terms of like the environment and the talent and how things could play out for him this season. And as I alluded to earlier, Brock Bowers going in the second round, Trey McBride and Colston Loveland going in the third round. Tyler Warren, you can normally get in the fifth round. I've seen him slip even later than that. I just don't think he's like quite the household name. And he hasn't gotten the hype that Colston Loveland has gotten this offseason. And yet you look at his situation with Michael Pittman not there anymore. Michael Pittman with 111 targets in that offense last year. You have a player that actually led this team in targets last year. He had one more than Pittman, 112, and did that as a rookie. And it was kind of a tale of two seasons for him. And it was injuries to him in the second half of the year that also factored in. But the big one was Daniel Jones going down. Before Daniel Jones got hurt, we saw Tyler Warren putting up the sixth most fantasy points per game among tight ends in this offense. And of course, the Colts were just rolling. And that's why it feels weird to talk about the Colts on this episode, because if we get anything close to what they were in the first half of the season, this team is a playoff team. This team is nowhere near the bad teams conversation. But I think what I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to identify, if I don't get one of those elite tight ends, who am I taking? And the fantasy community is on this one. Like, he is the fourth tight end off the board, so he's not really surprising anyone. But I think what could surprise people is he's sort of like that guy who could sneak in and potentially become like an elite fantasy producer. Because in this offense, Alec Pierce will get more opportunity this year, but he's coming off an injury. He had surgery. It's offseason. We're going to have to see where he's at. Haven't seen him on the field yet. Josh Downs, we like, but Josh Downs is somebody that's still trying to prove himself, right? He hasn't really had that breakout year. And I think the way this offense could evolve this season, and not evolve in a good way, but just kind of, you know, the way that they can overcome Daniel Jones, you know, knee injury last year, and now he's coming back, he's probably not going to run as much. So I think they're going to try to get that ball out quick. And I think that really plays to Tyler Warren, and I think it plays to Josh Downs. That's why they're two players that I keep highlighting, two players that I'm drafting a bunch. But I really look at this offense, and I see Tyler Warren as somebody that could get that massive volume that we're looking for, could be one of the very few tight ends that is the number one target getter in his offense, and could really surprise people and provide a ton of value, even though he's going in the fifth round or around that area. So I don't know how you feel about him, Harmon, but I keep warming up to him in a range where I normally don't take tight ends. I will say, like, it's either the real elite guys or we wait and we wait and we wait. And I've actually convinced myself on Tyler Warren that he's somebody that I'm willing to start with grab a couple running backs, grab a couple receivers in the first four rounds, then grab Tyler Warren, and then figure out the rest.
And he kind of exists in a funny spot ADP wise right now. Like I mentioned, 51st overall. It's a little bit of like no man's land at the tight end position, because you have Bowers at 17, McBride at 21, Colson Loveland at 36. They're in a little bit of like a kind of descending tier there, but generally they're the early vanity tight ends. And I get why Loveland is going so far ahead of Warren, because number one, he's got the steam from the end of last season. We all get that. I also think he's a more dynamic player than Tyler Warren. We're more excited about the Bears offense than the Colts offense. I get that. But so then it's Tyler Warren at 51st. And then again, it's kind of another drop until you get to Tucker Kraft at 68, Kyle Pitts at 74. So he does make for like an interesting spot strategy wise when you're building teams. I don't know about you. I have not really taken a lot of early quarterback this year, so I'm more likely to take a mid-ish tight mid, not mid player, but like mid round tight end, which is where like Tyler Warren certainly falls right into that grouping.
Yeah, agreed. And you mentioned Tucker Kraft. I think we could see something maybe similar to what we saw. Like last year, we were on Tucker Kraft, and one of the reasons was because the team was talking him up. He was going to have a big role in the offense. Another reason was he's just incredible after the catch, right? We'll see if Tucker Kraft can be incredible after the catch coming off a serious injury this year. That's a conversation for another day. But guess who last year finished second in yards after the catch? It was actually Tyler Warren behind only Trey McBride. So he has that in his bag. He can also do like some gimmicky stuff. Like they use him out of the backfield a little bit. He did that in college too. So that's another way that it could bump up his fantasy value a little bit. So to me, like last year it was Tucker Kraft, and we were getting Tucker Kraft a little bit cheaper than you have to pay up for Warren this year. But I think Warren could have that season where he comes out this year and all of a sudden surprises people as the number one or number two or number three scoring tight end early in the year, and maybe for the whole year. Like he has that in his bag.
Yeah, to your point, that some of that gimmicky stuff, even the way that he got some of those yards after catch plays, it's not gimmicky stuff, but it's like he's leaking off of play action and stuff like that, you know, just getting out into wide open spaces, some schemed up stuff as opposed to like Colson Loveland or Brock Bowers, who I think win more as like traditional route runners than a guy like Tyler Warren does. But they're going to be having to do a lot more of that stuff than ripping the ball downfield to Alec Pierce, to your point. And that's why I've been into Josh Downs and, okay, great, like Josh Downs. We know what Tyler Warren, like the debate is Josh Downs going to be on the field and two receiver sets and 12 personnel, all that. Tyler Warren is going to be on the field. Okay, so that's why I from an overall perspective, he goes higher. And I do like him as a pick this year. I don't know if I'm going to end up drafting him a lot because I've been waiting on tight end a little bit more. But I do think he's a good pick if you're just kind of looking at you're in the 50s and you don't love some of the options there. I could certainly end up seeing him catch like 85 balls this year and lead that team in receptions. My final pick for this segment, let's have the Garrett Wilson conversation here. Wide receiver 20, ADP of 44th overall. All right, here's the thing. Boone, one of these years has got to happen for Garrett Wilson, right? I mean, whenever you can lead off the segment. But maybe this time. It's super cool and not frustrating at all that we've got this new player comparison tool on receptionperception.com, and you punch in Garrett Wilson. It's super cool and not frustrating at all to see just like a bunch of elite players pop up, you know, Jamar Chase two times, Antonio Brown with the Steelers once, Stephon Diggs with the Vikings once, DeAndre Hopkins with the Houston. It's just like, oh, okay. And these are elite matches too. Like just the comps are so good here for Garrett Wilson based on who he is from a charting data perspective. And yet Geno Smith is his quarterback and Frank Reich is his offensive coordinator. Okay. I just do find the area that he goes in receiver land this year to be a spot where, you know, what's the big difference between him and Tetero McMillan who goes earlier? What's really the big difference between, you know, him and even like an Emeka Ibuka? I think Wilson's a better player and Mayfield's a more proven quarterback, but coming off of a down year, you know, a little bit crowded there. So again, I like all these players, but I just feel like the eye has moved away from Garrett Wilson because it's not been a good situation. It's not a good situation this year. But Geno Smith might be the best quarterback he's ever had. I've done this game before with like Allen Robinson with the Bears, being like, well, Nick Foles probably the best quarterback he's ever had. Andy Dalton probably the best. And it's just like never good. So again, I know I could get hurt again, but I think I'm willing to get hurt again this year. Thoughts?
He's just a tough one, and it's for all the reasons you said. Like the frustration that when we're having a conversation about like Drake London and Nico Collins, even I see a world where like Garrett Wilson's in that kind of conversation as like a top eight fantasy receiver, and yet sadly he's not. And we'll give him props for the fact that he's been able to like put up 3,000 yard seasons despite some of the quarterback play there. I just find it very tough for me, and it's a bit of the math problem, but I find it very tough that he's gone from like maybe one of the reasons he was still getting those 1,000-yard campaigns was there wasn't a ton of target competition, and now maybe Geno Smith could be that guy, but now all of a sudden there's like a weird amount of target competition there, right? In terms of right, like having AD Mitchell who's getting talked up, although he's always talked up this time of year.
This is AD Mitchell Jr. first round pick in July. Yeah, I mean, come on.
I hope so. Yeah. Well, oh yeah, for sure it is. Kenyon Sadiq, another first round. Like, there's so many guys there now. I think even like Mason Taylor, the second tight end, I think he's going to still be involved in the offense. So there's a lot of weird target competition. I hope it comes together. I want to be optimistic about this Jets offense, but. Yeah, it's tough for me to see Garrett Wilson this actually being the year for him because of the environment, the amount of target competition now, and the uncertainty around Geno Smith, though.
First five games of last season, 19-7, 19.4, 17.2, 16 points per game. We'll have a lot of time to talk about Garrett Wilson throughout draft season. We're going to have a bunch of shows, of course, but I'm having a tough time letting go. We'll see if Boone can get me to let go by the time we get to week one here. But that is going to do it for Boone here. Appreciate you, buddy. Really glad to have you back. And you're going to be with us every week now. You're stuck with me. No more vacation. It's time to lock in. It's time to get going here. You'll be doing your rankings. We're going to have a show on your rankings next week as well. So get to work. And get to looking forward to that here, everybody. That's going to do it also for us on the Yahoo Sports Network for this show. But as mentioned, on the other side of this quick break, we are going to come back with Eric Froton. We're going to talk college fantasy football. We will get into that right after this quick break. All right, we are back in college fantasy football. That's right. It is available now on Yahoo Fantasy, and I have the great pleasure of introducing our guy, Eric Froton, to the Yahoo Fantasy team. Eric, appreciate you joining here. I got to say off the top, I'm fired up. This is really cool. What an awesome opportunity to have you here leading the charge for college fantasy football. And, you know, I said this at the top of the show. I said this at FSGA last week. I say it pretty openly throughout the NFL season. I don't watch college football at all because the folks in the last segment heard my wife in the background getting gassed up about her her team, Argentina, in the World Cup. Go here. I mean, by the way, family's from there. Okay. Not a bandwagon fan. All right. So let's just get that out of the way. Anyways, I'm trying to keep that marriage happy. Okay. So I'm not watching a lot of college football while the NFL dominates my life all throughout the season. So I am usually woefully behind on my dynasty prospects, on specifically receivers that I need to lock in and chart during the offseason. So, Eric, I'm hyped up now that we've got college fantasy football. We've got you. I might be charting prospects in freaking September at this point, okay? Like, you might have me ahead of the curve where I need to go. So, with that, we are going to look ahead at some players that you have identified, four guys in college fantasy football that we need to keep an eye on for our Sicko Dynasty radar. Give us your first player here. And give us the lowdown.
Yeah, I try to make sure with my four players, I gave you a little bit of everything here. There will be two receivers and two running backs, but I wanted to give a little bit of the yin and the yang. Starting off out of the gate, we're going to go with Nick Marsh. He was at Michigan State last year, transferred to Indiana, and there's a pretty good reason for that because he gave D'Angelo Pons all he could handle when these two teams played last season. Marsh, he can do a little bit of everything, right? Scares cornerbacks with his twitch and with his speed. He's super quick and sudden on his breaks, wins on his breaks, and left Pons, as I mentioned, flat-footed against Indy a couple of different times. That is not something that very many wide receivers did last year. He also does a great job of just sinking those hips on his hitches and can turn off field quickly in one motion. In fact, when he's out there one-on-one squared up on a smaller cornerback, they'll use him sort of like you saw Drake London, somebody who was mentioned in one of your previous segments, as that outside bully. You know, they'll go throw a quick hitch and he'll face up against that corner and say, come try to tackle me. I'm 6'3", 203 and stronger than you. And routinely, he's just throwing cornerbacks who are inferior to him. He's putting their face in the turf. So in terms of his ability with the ball in his hands, off the breaks, he's great. Then you look at his deep ball capabilities, very comfortable in deep ball situations. Doesn't rush, doesn't look panicked, lets the ball travel, fights throughout the route and wins at the top of that catch point. Just everything you look at with Marsh, it's what you want. I personally have him as my wide receiver two, behind only the iconic Julio Jones squared Jeremiah Smith, who I didn't want to bother, throwing at you guys since we've heard about him ad nauseum.
I've heard of him at least.
Indeed. So, but, you know, to wrap it up with Marsh, man, the real cons on him is he had a horrible quarterback situation. I'll harken back to someone else you mentioned, Garrett Wilson. He is the Garrett Wilson of college football. He had Aiden Childs throwing the ball to him his first two seasons. One of, if not the apex, least accurate quarterbacks in the entire Power Four over the last two seasons. Had to overcome that, but didn't matter. 28 missed tackles on 58 receptions. A gaudy 48% missed tackle rate. I'm all in on Nick Marsh. Can't wait to see what he can do in that much more efficient Indiana offense.
Well, I got to say, man, you're talking about hip sync, getting in and out of breaks. Sounds like my type of wide receiver for sure. And obviously, folks listening to this pod know this based on last draft season. Indiana got a lot of opportunity available in that wide receiver room. And honestly, a lot of what you're kind of bringing to the table there, Eric, is a little bit of like Elijah Surratt mixed with Omar Cooper. I think Surratt was really good at getting in and out of his breaks on the curl routes specifically, like more towards the boundary. But Omar Cooper was a dog with the ball in his hands. So, I mean, it sounds like maybe they can get a little bit of like combination of that. And obviously, I know they have Charlie Becker as well on the team too. So, I mean, there's like some, see, I know a little something we're talking about college football, all right? But like, I think they can get a little something here out of Nick Marsh. That's a good pick. Bring us to your second player that we need to keep our eyes on.
Yeah, I'm going to go over to the running back position, specifically Jaden Baugh. He's the running back for Florida. 6'1", 228. We're talking about a fully formed bell cow right here with Mr. Baugh. And he's been on Florida his whole career. And that was under the Billy Napier regime, which is now defunct. It is the John Sumrall era upon us. And that's really going to help because after Napier got fired, right, in the following six games following his dismissal, he scored 17 plus fantasy points in every single contest, did Mr. Jaden Baugh. And we're talking about that size. 565 squat, 335 clean, 350 bench, and you're looking at an estimated 455 to 457 40 time. I look at him as like a Ramondre Stevenson type. He's got the size, he has the power, but the nimble feet and the lateral agility is very rare. The fluidity to go with the power. It's not something you see out of guys that size, and his change of direction, again, for his size. Very, very fluid. A good cornering ability is kind of what I call it. Great feel, good vision, and just his stiff arm, violent. You look at everything that Jaden Baugh brings to the table, including his increased receiving workload after Napier got fired. I think you're going to see Sumrall, who is much more friendly to his running backs, give him the full bell cow usage, and you see Jaden Baugh ascend possibly to even running back one, depending on what we see from Ahmad Hardy, who suffered a gunshot wound earlier, and Kawan Lacy, running back for Ole Miss. All three of them are pretty much interchangeable as the top three in this 2027 class. I am personally a fan of Baugh. He is my running back one heading into the season.
How much of when you're doing specific, obviously we're talking like looking forward to NFL draft, dynasty, whatever. When you're doing college fantasy football, like how consistent do you find coaching usage at the running back position to be? Because obviously when I'm thinking about it from a receiver perspective, I know like, all right, this guy's past design looks like this, and like, all right, I've seen this before. You know, the Looney Tunes offense at Tennessee is the one I always come back to. Obviously, what we were talking about, Indiana, it's a very RPO-heavy system where one guy lines up on one side of the field, and that's about it. And so I talk about that a lot when it comes to college passing schemes. When you're looking at, like, running back usage for coaches, like you mentioned, this guy's coming in here, taking over at Florida, how much consistency do you find there? Is it a little bit kind of case-by-case dependent?
You know, it's interesting because you'll have head coaches that will be defensive head coaches are offensive head coaches. Usually you got someone mm-hmm. who comes in on the D side. They want to protect their defense. It's just sort of in their nature. You know what I mean? You'll typically see a lot more reliance on a tilted game script to the run side. If you're going to have a more offensive, sort of progressive-minded head coach who has really built his reputation off that, the Lincoln Rileys, the Lane Kiffins of the world, you're going to see them usually run a more up-tempo, more advanced spread air raid type concepts. But one thing that is, you know, sort of I feel like is universal is you got to have a running back that you trust. You know, you want to somebody you can look at and say, I need 3 yards here. You know, I need 2 yards. I need to be able to throw a good quick screen. Situational ball, you have to have somebody you can rely on. So that is pretty much universal. The only time you're really going to get a run into, I would say, really suppressed usage is like a Florida State situation where you have Norvell runs out 3 different backs. You will see every situation you're going to have a different guy in there, and it really suppresses the overall fantasy viability of those backs. So I would say, you know, the bell cow back, it's still alive and well in college, but you will see the shared backfields and even the tri backfields affect how you're looking at these guys and how you perceive them.
Makes sense. Again, total novice when it comes to like fantasy football at the college level, admittedly. So I am definitely trying to pick your brain here on this one. But let's get to your third player that the dynasty freaks need to keep an eye on here.
Yeah, and this is one I feel like you can, you know, in terms of an archetype, Matt, this is one you can really lean into. And one I really wanted to bring up just based on what he can and can't do and how this translates. That being said, Bryant Wesco for Clemson, a true speed merchant. I mean, he's estimated around 22 miles an hour on the gun. His play speed is legit, you know, and you see him against LSU in that first game of the season going up against Mansoor Delane, and was, frankly, even though he has that speed, there is the ability to disrupt him with physicality in his route. You saw Delane do a great job of it, but man, if he gets free, if you can get him off that release, he moves different than 6'2", 190 wide receivers you're used to. Has a real rhythm he had with Cade Klubnik. You mentioned the Jets, you know, earlier. Could see some Cade Klubnik over there if Geno Smith
I think we're going to see some Cade, bro. I think we're going to see some Cade. Right. Did you see the draft call between Frank Reich and Cade Klubnik where he was like, man, I wanted you. We were talking about this, man. I wanted you. And I was just like, oh, my God. Frank Reich is going to be running an RPO-heavy offense in 2026, just like always, because nothing changes. So I think, yeah. I think we're going to be seeing some Cade with the Jets this year.
Well, in Frank Reich's defense, I mean, he was the head coach of Stanford last year and led them to a dominant 4-8 record, taking over for Troy Taylor. It was a tough run for Frank last year, okay? So he got humped by Clemson, and he was just looking at Cade Klubnik probably against his less-than-acceptable Stanford defense. He probably looked like a million bucks. So enough about Frank. I apologize for digressing there and getting into the NFL there, Matt, but I'm just trying to relate to the best of my ability. That being said, with Bryant Westbrook, like I said, he had a good rhythm with him, really, really solid on those bang outs. And when you get him the ball in space, he took a 10-yard cross against Georgia Tech where the safety had an angle on him at midfield. He's about 15 yards of separation and converging. And Westco blew that angle away. He never came within 5 yards. I mean, it was an outrageous display of speed, and that's what he does well. What he doesn't do well is he had some throws that just hit him in the hands. He got bumped, took the contact, had time, it seemed, to gather, but didn't. you know, still let the ball bounce off his hands. That physicality really got into him on the route. Not just that, but you see him struggling balls that are outside of his frame. You know, the athleticism is there. You would think that he could handle those sort of things, but he doesn't, right? And I'm going to use an example. Is the last target of the season for him was against SMU, and it was the Bryant-Wesco experience, right? Torches the corner, heads up to steam, splits the safety, he's open by 5 yards. Vezina, who's in at this time, who's the backup quarterback, this isn't even Klubnik, throws him a dime. He slows down, misjudges the ball, and then has to go and just throw his hands up and pray, and it bounces off his hands because he didn't judge the ball properly. I saw it time and time again on his tape. So my question for you is, seeing a guy who has the tools, has speed for days, like can run a clean out, has the ability to win off the break and has a, you know, has a good release, but you see that downfield ball tracking and his difficulty absorbing contact, how do you look at those type of receivers and evaluate them? Is that something that you really have a problem with, or you feel you can overcome in general?
I'm usually the guy that's going to forgive a lot of drops because it's a noisy stat year to year. But to your point, and again, I haven't watched Wesco. I was working at Clemson last year, obviously with Antonio Williams, but obviously I'm not looking at Wesco. But I can't say this for sure, but just listening to you describe it, it sounds like it's more of like a true tracking issue for him, which I think is different than like, oh, he just drops a couple passes here and there. And then obviously like Casey Concepcion in last year's draft or this year's draft, where he definitely had like a clap attack issue, but a lot of like more focused drops. And you would see him make plays above the rim down the field. You would see him get up and track the ball and things like that. So it's like, okay, I think this is something that he might always have like irritating drops and stuff like that, but he can make the contested catches. I think for Wesco, the question will just be, can he prove this year that he can track that thing a little better? Because otherwise, like, yeah, if you can't track it, you can't be a deep threat. Like, that's the reality of being a vertical receiver. And it sounds like the archetype of player that you outline here, he is more of that downfield receiver.
Yeah, certainly. And you mentioned Antonio Williams, who he was doing a lot of the interior work, the crosses, you know, the digs, things like that. You saw a different kind of route tree than what you expected out of Wesco. So, you know, it really, unfortunately, it doesn't translate as well what Antonio Williams is doing as opposed to what he's doing. But hey, you know, that's why we watch the games. And I'll be very interested to hear what you think after the season on him.
Yeah, he's someone that I think will be really fascinating to track based on your evaluation here. And just can he correct some of those tracking issues? It's always tough. That's, I think, a little more difficult to fix than just like focus drops or random ones here and there. But let's wrap this up with your fourth and final player. I believe you said we're going back to the running back position here.
We're going to go back to the running back position. And this is kind of a polarizing prospect among some in the industry. Isaac Brown for Louisville. And it really has to do a classic speed back type prospect. Had only 100 carries last year. Popped for 878 yards. I know that that's probably not something you're used to hearing in the NFL with an 8.8 yards per carry average, but welcome to college, and this is Louisville. It is a Jeff Brohm-led offense, and they are potent. I mean, the Louisville Brohm system is renowned in terms of producing points, and Isaac Brown, 22 runs of 10-plus yards on 100 carries, estimated 22.1 miles per hour. It's a 94th percentile mark. I mean, we're talking about a truly explosive player, and not just that. 5.3 yards after contact, number one in the entire FBS for running backs with 100 carries or more. So he's not just doing it by blowing through open holes when you're watching him. He's creating bad angles, that sort of the A-chain effect where you're moving at a different speed than everybody else on the field, and it translates to when you're cutting and cornering as well, because he's going one way and he can face you up, you know, break you down, and then he's going the exact opposite direction, you know, and he does a great job with that where he makes you think, coming through the hole, oh, there's a tackler, you know, converging linebacker on the right side, I'll face him up, you know, pivot towards him, and then boom, just break left, and it freezes, You see him freeze linebackers like that all the time, where they barely even touch him. And they have him like dead to rights in the hole, and he's gone. And that is something that just you can't teach. Very few players have it. And his ability to, you know, sniff those holes out and flow is just exceptional. Now, that's the good stuff, you know, is that the potency and the ability to create the bad angles. What I'm concerned about translating to the next level, he's listed at 5'9", 190, right? Automatically the size concerns. You're hearing,
so he's not 5'9", 190.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if he's exactly 5'9". I don't think he's 190. But the ultra speed is what gets him, you know, looked at. Not going to be much as a pass blocker. If he's 5'7 and a half, that is a big deal as opposed to 5'9", 190. I was wondering, with guys like that, how important is that to you? And does that make him almost a, you know, you kind of can't take him as seriously as you'd like to, given the skill set, given the numbers, because of the size?
Yeah, I don't know how deep you are in the best ball freak zone on Twitter, but Keaton Mitchell seems to be a guy that's talked about literally, you know, every day. And Keaton Mitchell, I think Keaton Mitchell's a really enticing player, obviously super explosive. It takes you one run to be like, man, why isn't this guy get the ball more? But then you actually kind of break down how the runs happen, and it's pretty much just, you know, toss to the outside, counter, it's just one sort of concept. It does sound like to me, though, just listening to your analysis on Brown, while it's tough with the system, obviously, and I mean, I watched a ton of Chris Bell last year for Louisville, and it's one of those college offenses, lined up on one side of the field, a lot of spread out stuff. So that is a little difficult when you're talking about running backs, but it does sound like, based on your analysis, though, he's more of a nuanced runner maybe than Keaton Mitchell, or is that still something to, and no, again, no disrespect to Keaton Mitchell, I think he's a good player, but Isaac Brown might have a little bit more nuance to his game in terms of reading through the holes and using his vision and everything. It sounds like that would be the key for me, is can he be more of a obviously size wise an outlier, but does he have more true traditional running back skills, and even if the traits aren't there, I guess that's the question.
Yeah, and it's very much up in the air, and that's why I kind of want to include a Wesco and a Brown for us to talk about. So we didn't just have a full, you know, gushing session about these guys. had a little bit of, he's so great, he's so wonderful. But, you know, get into some of these guys who have a little bit of steam in the offseason, so you understand when you hear those names, all right, what does this entail? You know, what are the good and the bad to watch for when you're evaluating some of these guys, when you got Louisville and Clemson on the telly?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, this is better than ever. You guys are going to be so far ahead of your dynasty league mates, because you're going to listen to Eric talk about these guys, you're going to watch these guys, and you're going to play college fantasy football on Yahoo right now. Download the app, play college fantasy football, get your first look at these prospects, and have a little skin in the game. Okay, it's one thing to be like, I'm watching college football and I'm getting ready for my dynasty drafts. Now you can actually have something on the line here, so you have a personal investment and a little bit of a first look sneak peek at these prospects as they're coming into the league. They're dominating college football and they're putting up points for your college fantasy football team. Eric, appreciate your time, man. Tell the people, do you have a good sense of your schedule? I know it's July 15th, so you can say no, but do you have any sense of what content you're going to be doing weekly this year during the college football season or leading up to the college football season that the people can bookmark and check out?
Oh, sure. There'll be a flurry of content coming out in the lead up to August 3rd, which is when our Yahoo drafts do start. We'll have a guide to put out. I'll have some pretty in-depth evaluations of each position from a college fantasy standpoint, so you have a pretty good base to work off of. And in season, it's going to be pretty hot and heavy. Try to have a review every Sunday that comes out of college fantasy relevant news each week, and then going into waiver wire, start sit, everything of that nature. Any sort of lineup questions, I'll try to be available to answer those throughout the season, and to just try to give you all the resources available so you can compete in your college fantasy football league and win on Yahoo.
Amazing. I love it. Eric, make sure you're just ready to get a lot of messages from me. Okay. Like, I'm going to be asking you about like which receivers I need to be looking at. Okay. And the people out there will also be hitting you up for a lot of start sit advice. I think it's going to be great to have you on the team. I am very, very excited. So a warm welcome again to Eric. And yes, guys, go get your college fantasy football league going right now here on Yahoo, yahoofantasy.com/college. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see it on the screen right there. That is going to do it for today's show. Hell of a program. Shout out to Justin Boone and Eric. I mean, off-season pods are kind of over in terms of the cadence, right? No more one show a week. Starting next week, we're going to ramp back up to two pods a week, and then we go daily once again in August. The longest preseason ever, by the way. Okay, there's going to be we got a whole extra week before Labor Day comes. So, yeah, a lot of content coming your way here in the next month plus. I could not be more excited. So yes, we are going to be on your feeds Tuesday and Thursday to get you ready for fantasy draft season as real life NFL training camp opens up here very shortly. So until Tuesday, two shows a week, we are out.